Harihi Om. Sahana Vavatu, Sahanao Bhunaktu, Sahaviryan Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navati Tamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai. So now Vidura has gotten up and is giving warnings and advices to the king about how the way Duryodhana is going to behave is going to destroy the kingdom. And he gave examples and everything. But Duryodhana, of course, then doesn't appreciate this and all that. So everyone turns to the king and he says nothing. Vidura took a seat near Dhritarashtra. But still the blind king remained silent. Duryodhana laughed and turned back to the gang. So he's laughing because he's in control like that. He controls his father and he's getting what he wants. Unfortunately, even though he's a Kshatriya, he has that passion, that desire to rule, that ability to rule. But he doesn't have the character. So that was the whole point of the prophecy. He doesn't have the character to rule. So he's unable to think of the benefit of his citizens. He can only think of himself. He's not even thinking what's good for anybody else in the room. It's just what's good for him. And anybody supports him in that, then they're a friend. If they don't, then they're an enemy. He told Shakuni to continue, and the Gandhara king asked Yudhishthira, "O king, you have lost so much wealth. Tell me, do you still have more which you can stake?" Yudhishthira replied, "I have gold counted in tens of thousands, millions, tens of millions, billions, hundreds of billions, and even more. All of this I shall stake here now. Throw again." Shakuni smiled and cast the dice. As if charmed, they fell upon whatever number he called. Again and again his voice rose above the silence in the hall. "I have won." Yudhishthira played like a man possessed. He seemed intent on losing everything. He staked all of his innumerable cows, horses, goats, sheep, and other animals. Having lost his entire wealth, he then staked his kingdom itself. "That too is lost," Shakuni says. "It appears you have lost everything, O king." But so then Shakuni's, the way he's playing is just to kind of like goad him or bait him into just continuing more and more. It was like, here, "Oh, it appears you've lost everything." You know, in the way of that, it's everything. But at the same time, as the way he'll say it, it'll be is that, "But is there anything else?" You know. So then he makes him think about it. And so in other words, Yudhishthira then stakes all the things like that. He doesn't have to. He's the sinful, you know, Shakuni's the sinful one. But the way he speaks, he cleverly gets the pious person to fall into his trap. And then it just looks like, oh, you know, no, it was his choice. Nothing to do with me. Yudhishthira's head hung down and sweat covered his face. Surely it was time to end the game. But something within him impelled him to continue. Right? So we know that Krishna is arranging something because he's come to, you know, serve the devotees and protect the devotees, interact with the devotees. And so why wouldn't he protect the Pandavas? And at the same time, as we know that he's descended to destroy all the Asuras. And so now you can go around and you have all the different skirmishers that are there. And the different fights mean skirmishes for Krishna. For the other people, they're big fights. And so many demons in that, someone may or may not remember which demons, which fight, who is where, when, what time. Everybody remembers Kurukshetra. Because it was the second greatest battle in history. So Ramayana, that was the biggest. And then otherwise, how could Ravana come and steal Sita? But in doing that, he destroyed all the demons at once. In the same way here. By this battle of Kurukshetra, all the demons will be done at once and in something that's very glorious. And when we remember Kurukshetra, we remember Bhagavad Gita. Right? So then, you know, so many things. Plus, you had the teachings of Bhishma Dev. So many, you know, nice things came out of it. So, you know, it's Krishna arranging, but at the same time as, you know, the devotees are taking part. He thought of Krishna, if only he was present, because then he would be able to say what to do. He would certainly save the situation. But Krishna, would, you know, because he could show some influence. But Krishna was the supreme controller of everything. Perhaps he may still arrange for him to get back all he had lost. Yet, what was there left to stake? Because he's thinking, maybe I can get everything back. But at the same time, it's just whatever's wagered, that's what you get back. You know, so then if he wagers, and then it's he's wagered something, but then what's that against? Because the point is let's say he's wagered the kingdom. Technically, if he won, he would get Duryodhana's. Or in those hundreds and billions and all that of cold coins, if he wins, Duryodhana has to give that. Duryodhana doesn't have that. So we can see they're just getting him to bet. They don't have to back up. Duryodhana says, of course I have. He doesn't have. Otherwise, he was, why is he so envious? Right? Yudhishthira looked at his brothers. The hall remained silent as Yudhishthira replied to Shakuni. Here is the youthful and fair complexion of Nakula, adorned with gold and jewels and shining like a celestial. This mighty armed prince shall be my next stake. Moments later, Shakuni's voice was heard again. Lo, I have won him. Yudhishthira breathed heavily. By his side, Bhima and Arjuna both clenched their fists in silent fury as Yudhishthira turned towards Sahadeva. This handsome prince Sahadeva administers justice exactly like Yamaraj and has acquired a reputation for learning in this world. Although he does not deserve to be staked, still I shall play with such a dear object as my stake. The dice were rolled and the monotonous voice rang out again. See, I have won him also. But he's saying it in such a joyful way, just like, you know, we're just playing and having a fun time. No one else is there. It's silence in the hall. Shakuni looked at Yudhishthira with cunning eyes. It seems that Bhima and Arjuna are more dear to you than Madhu's sons, for they have not yet been staked. I mean, one, he's only gone through that much. But he's just, he's making it look like if you don't stake the other two, you're being biased. You know, so it's very, very, very sinister. Right? Yudhishthira's eyes turned red with anger. Fool, disregarding morality, you simply try to create disunion amongst us, who are all of one heart. Shakuni, not wanting the game to end, replied hastily, O king, in the excitement of playing, a gambler may say things that he would never otherwise utter. I bow to you. You are senior to me in every way. Let us now continue. But let us now continue as if it's an ordinary game. Right? You know, Yudhishthira looked at Arjuna. Surely Krishna would not allow his own dear friend to be lost. He who takes us like a boat to the other shore of battle, who is ever victorious over foes, and who is the greatest hero in this world, with that prince as my stake, do I now play. Duryodhana leaned forward eagerly as Shakuni threw the dice. Karna sat silently next to him. He was happy to see his friend winning the game, but he would have preferred a fair fight with the Pandavas on the battlefield, because right? He has more of that Kshatriya spirit, though he's also, you know, bad. But the thing is he prefers fighting than diplomacy, while Duryodhana always prefers diplomacy over fighting. Dushasana and the other brothers of Duryodhana rubbed their hands in glee as the dice dropped and Shakuni cried, I have won. Shakuni gathered up the dice and looked at Yudhishthira, who sat down cast and shocked. We have now won the foremost, the bowman, O king. Stake the powerful Bhima, the only wealth you have left. While before he said, oh, you've lost everything. So is there anything else? He says, you've lost that which he had, or do you have anything? And then he lost the only wealth you have left. Then he'll say, is there nothing more? So you can see his game. He just keeps... there's things, oh, it's all gone. So the one thinks, wow, is everything all gone? And you try to think of something. So is there something more? And then you get them to say something. Yudhishthira shook his head. There was no turning back. Slowly he replied, although he does not deserve to be staked, I now play with this prince who is our leader, who fights like the thunder wielder, Indra, this illustrious hero with a lion-like neck, arched eyebrows and expansive eyes, who cannot tolerate an insult, whose prowess is unmatched in this world, and who grinds all foes. He is now staked. Roll the dice. Bhima looked at Duryodhana with narrowed eyes. He would have seized the sneering prince by the neck right there and then, but without Yudhishthira's permission, he remained still. Right, so they still are following Dharma. Right, because we have to remember is that gambling is something that the Kshatriyas can take part in. Because for them, it's not gambling just to waste time. It's a challenge. So whenever they're challenged in a fight, you know, or in a game or in something, then they take that up. Yudhishthira mentioned that in the beginning. And so Duryodhana also knowing that, he's taking full advantage. But you see, they're always still following. And Duryodhana and his cohorts, then they're always seeing how by sinful means they can get more and more and more. The dice rolled inexplorably into the number called by Shakuni. Bhima was lost. Laughing again, Shakuni said, "Well, king, you have lost your gold, your jewels, your animals, your kingdom, and even your brothers. Is there anything still remaining that you can stake?" Yudhishthira looked up at Shakuni. "I alone am left, the eldest of my brothers." "I alone am left" means there is nothing else. Right? "The eldest of my brothers and beloved by them all. If you win me, then I shall do whatever a slave is obliged to do." Shakuni released the dice and called out, "You are one." He turned to all the kings of the assembly and proudly boasted how he had won the Pandavas one by one. Then he smiled at Yudhishthira and says, "You have lost even yourself in an act worthy of a sinful man." So being goaded by a sinful man, he, you know, engaged in something that's sinful. So that's the thing. In play, "Oh yes, you should do." And then when they do, "Oh, see how sinful you are, how much of a nonsense you are." So that's the point of these sinful people. Is they always use everything to their advantage. If you're pious, they'll use it to their advantage. If they've gotten you to do something impious due to their impiety, then their response is, "Oh, you're behaving badly." You know, they come up and bother you, and then you say something back. "Oh, is this proper? That is what a gentleman behaves like." So you can see, as the sinful man, he's just sinful through and through. It's a real unfortunate situation for the living entity when they get into this mentality. Because in this mentality, they can never at any time connect themselves to Krishna. Like you can see, none of this, his party, can ever surrender. "When you still have wealth, you should not stake yourself." They said, "Oh, so you've lost everything." And he says, "Is there anything?" He's only himself. But now, having done that, and he's lost it, now he's saying, "Why?" And then he's saying, "It's an act worthy of a sinful man, but you have other wealth." So now he's suggesting things that should... "You still have one stake dear to you, bet Draupadi, the princess of Panchala, and with her win yourself back." So he's even giving a reason too. You know, "Oh, but with that you can win yourself back." Yudhishthira gazed blankly ahead. His thoughts were in turmoil. How could he stake Draupadi? But there was nothing else left. But he already said before there was nothing. So if Shakuni hadn't suggested it, then this wouldn't have happened. Or they lost the kingdom, nothing would have happened. Like even with Nala, he lost the kingdom. That's where it stopped. Right? His kingdom was gone, and he had cast his brothers and even himself into slavery. That had been a terrible mistake. How had he let himself get so carried away? Now Draupadi was only his chance to turn things around. Yet he had to bet her. What else could he do? What shelter did she have now anyway? Right? But she does. She's their wife. So they go into slavery, she goes with them. All her husbands were lost, so they're taking it that he's also, that's why that Bhishma becomes confused, because why would he bet her when he's lost? I mean, she's lost, because they can't separate husband and wife, but he bet her as if they're separated. They're lost and not, you know. Confused and praying fervently to Krishna, the Pandava looked up at the laughing Shakuni. "I shall now stake she who is neither short nor tall, neither lean nor corpulent, who has bluish-black curly hair, and whose eyes resemble the leaves of an autumn lotus. That princess whose fragrance is like a lily, and who is as beautiful as the goddess Lakshmi, who possesses every accomplishment, who is the last to take rest and the first to rise due to caring for us all, and who is such that anyone would desire her," yeah, which means everybody in that hall, "she shall be my final stake." Yudhishthira's brothers were horrified. How could the emperor do this? The Kuru elders loudly called out, "Fie, fie," but they're not going to stop it. The whole assembly became agitated, and the pious kings present there began to grieve with tears flowing from their eyes. Bhishma, Drona, and Kripa were all covered in perspiration. Vidura sat sighing like a snake, because Vidura knows he can say whatever he likes and nobody will care. But Dhritarashtra, glad at heart, was unable to conceal his emotions, and he asked repeatedly, is the stake won? You know, as it's just the stake, he's not looking at it. She's the empress of the world. She's the daughter-in-law. They're gambling with his daughter-in-law, right? And he's fine with it. So he's, you know, that's the whole thing, is they're all carried away. Otherwise, this thing should have been stopped long before by Dhritarashtra. But no, he's happy. Shakuni's face was flushed with excitement. Once more, the dice obeyed his command, and he shouted, she is one, she is one. Duryodhana and Karna laughed and slapped their hands together. Mocking the anguished Yudhishthira, Shakuni jeeringly repeated again and again, you still have one stake dear to you. Bet her, O Yudhishthira, ruling the dice as he spoke. You know, now he's harassing him about his offering that thing. So not only is he harassing him for why he's staking when he has something, meaning Draupadi, then what's he doing? He's laughing at him why he staked. You know, so that's the whole point, is that for the sinful person, whichever way it goes, they always try to use it for advantage. There is no question. It's just like Srila Prabhupada was explaining. The criminal mind never sees that they're doing anything wrong. They go out, they're stealing. They don't think it's wrong. And then if you come and, let's say, they walk into your house and you hit them with a stick and break their arm, and that, then they blame you for breaking their arm. Why did you break their arm? You know, so that's the whole thing, is that the criminal mentality can never see them wrong. Duryodhana turned to Vidura. Come, O Vidura, bring Draupadi, the Pandavas' dear wife. Now, the Pandavas are there. They're not saying, okay, now you guys, you know, go in to, you know, start, let's do this work. So there it's just a matter of defeating them. Let her be forced to sweep the chambers. Let the unfortunate women now live with the serving maids. So you can see is that there's a, it means they have enmity towards the Pandavas. But it's only just an enmity by position or power or influence. But you see with Draupadi, their envy goes much further, because they wanted to marry Draupadi and they couldn't, the Pandavas did. And now because in their mind, she chose the wrong person, not themselves, now they want to make her pay for that, right? Like that. So very, 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 very nasty. You never deal with any lady. Serving maids, you never deal with like this. You're supposed to be properly behaved. Etiquette goes there. Women are women, whether they're a maid or whether they're a queen. But they're behaving that you don't even deal with animals like this, right? You know, you're supposed to deal with your horses and your cows and your goats properly. So how they're dealing, there is nothing for them. Only snakes and, you know, like that. Snakes bite for no reason. So they're like, and the thing is, but at least a snake's a snake. They're worse. Vidura retorted, wicked man, you do not see that by such words you are tying a noose around your neck, right? Because this is the point at which now it's been bad and it's going to be a problem. You know, it could cause war, things like that. But with this, behaving badly with Draupadi, this will destroy them. Do you not realize that, but a deer, you are provoking the anger of so many tigers? You have placed on your head 5 venomous snakes. Do not agitate them further, or you will soon go to Yamaraja's abode. Vidura looked around the assembly as he continued. Draupadi cannot be considered a slave because Yudhishthira lost her after losing himself. He was therefore not in a position to stake the princess, right? He's lost himself, she's lost with him. Like that. Like the bamboo that bears fruit on the point of death, the foolish Duryodhana wins treasure at dice. Completely intoxicated, he does not see the terrors that this game will bring. So he says bamboo that bears fruit on the point of death, because bamboo always is by a shoot that it grows. And so when the bamboo does bear fruit, that means that that species all over the world, that whole species will die at that time. He's like, let's say you have that species in your yard and it bears fruit, which is like, it's like once every 100 years or more. Then when that does, it's doing that all the whole planet. And after that fruit is bare, you know, like that, and the seeds fall, they'll all die. Right? And then if you want that, you have to plant those seeds to get the new bamboo. So what he's pointing out here is that that Duryodhana liked the bamboo that's bearing fruit, that means bearing fruit, because you say when it bears fruit, then it's, you know, opulence and all that. So he's becoming opulent, but he doesn't realize that the process he's using to gain his opulence through this gambling match and behaving badly with Pandavas and Draupadi, that will be his death. It'll be his destruction. So, therefore, Duryodhana wins treasure at dice. Completely intoxicated, he does not see the terrors that this game will bring. So he's not understanding that this will be his destruction. Right. So now everything's been lost. The Pandavas have lost themselves, Yudhishthira himself, and Shakuni's kind of like prodding, he's embedded and lost Draupadi. So immediately Duryodhana then wants her to be brought into the assembly and make her do menial stuff and all that, because he's so envious of the Pandavas that he just wants to make it hurt for them. But he's also so angry with Draupadi that he didn't win her in the Swayambar. She didn't become his wife. So he just wants to make the Pandavas and her feel as bad as possible. And somehow or another, by that, then he feels a little better. Vidura went before Dhritarashtra. "You should check your son now, O king. Only low-class men utter painful words that offend others," right? So now he's offending Draupadi and that. And so he's saying, stop now. The brothers, you know, the cousins, they offend each other a bit. Okay, but you could get away with it. They're men. When you start offending women, then Vidura sees that, oh, this is not going to happen. Because he sees what's happening. He's already pointed out Yudhishthira was lost before Draupadi, so he can't actually gamble her. So she's technically not lost. You know, Duryodhana won't care. And now he's trying to point, you should stop him now, because what he's going to do now, how he's going to behave, you don't know. And it could destroy you all. Kunti's sons never use the kind of harsh speech in which Duryodhana indulges. Like, this whole time, they've all behaved themselves. Like, you'll even see, even they have an outburst, they say it very properly. But Duryodhana just says whatever he feels like, that he knows it will enter the heart and like a knife, you know, just twist like that. Learned men always condemn such behavior. Stones may float, boats may sink, but this foolish prince will never heed good advice. That's pretty straightforward. He does not see that dishonesty is one of the fearful gates to hell through which he is leading his brothers and the entire Kuru race. Right? Because they're all sitting there and it's all being sanctioned by Dhritarashtra, this whole thing. It's him and his brothers are going there because of the behavior. But he's going to take down the whole Kuru race with him. Everybody who's there. All the families, everyone connected, their allies, you know, everyone. He will certainly be the cause of our destruction. Duryodhana laughed. Fie on Vidura, he sneered. Right? So that's the thing before. Vidura makes his point. His father doesn't say anything to correct him. And then immediately he takes advantage. He takes that as a sanction that he can go on and do what he wants. So then immediately he sneered, looking around. He saw the chief servant of the palace and he called out to him, "Pratikamin, bring Draupadi here. You have nothing to fear from the Pandavas. It is only Vidura who raves in fear," right? Because Vidura actually knows religion. He knows what they're getting into. Duryodhana is just taking immediately, like, you know, they're not going to do anything. They could, but because of their religious character, they're not. So Duryodhana has faith that they'll follow their dharma. But that they're being religious and controlling themselves, he takes full advantage to behave as badly as possible. You know, it means, in other words, however much you can get away with. You know, to be just like in London, you have those palace guards, you know, those big huge hats and all that, and they stand there, and they're not supposed to be disturbed. So people come up, and they get in their face and say things and try to do things and to distract them and this and that, because they know they're not supposed to. So they take it as far as possible until they touch them. Because as long as they don't touch them, the guard will just stand there. But if they touch them, at that time, they can deal with them. So the guy, if it's a guy, the guy's standing right in front of him, that he's holding his gun like this. As soon as he does, he just whacks him with a gun right in the crotch, you know, like that, and tells him to move. Because if he doesn't at that time, then they can deal very badly with him. Because now he's touched an officer. He could be arrested. So getting whacked he's getting off easy. So there you see is that whenever it's a thing, oh, nobody will do anything and this and that, I can do whatever I want. They take it as far as they can because they have nothing, they have no regulator, nothing to control them. The Pandavas sat with their heads bowed. In the presence of Dhritarashtra, Bhishma, Drona, Yudhishthira remained silent, right? Because they're not saying anything, as they had done, right? He was stupefied with sorrow. His attachment for gambling had brought about utter ruination. Now, before everyone's eyes, the chaste Draupadi was about to be humiliated. Yet, what could he do? With the sole exception of Vidura, the elders were saying nothing. If they, and especially Dhritarashtra, approved of Duryodhana's acts, then he was helpless. He had never transgressed their orders, because we see before, to avoid, because he knew, he had heard about that there's going to be a war and destruction of everything. So then he thought, I shouldn't do anything separately, I'll only follow my elders. So he took a vow at that time, and so now he's following that vow. He had never transgressed their orders. To him, his superiors were as good as God. He accepted their commands as coming directly from the Supreme Lord. The terrible events unfolding must somehow be the Lord's arrangement, right? Because it is, but it still, it doesn't mean that the pastime that's going on doesn't have the intensity of emotions. That doesn't mean that Duryodhana will be destroyed. Seeing Yudhishthira sitting silently, his brothers also remained passive, although they yearned to stop Duryodhana from his intention to insult Draupadi. Chapter 20. Draupadi dragged to the assembly. The Pratyekaman went quickly to the ladies' chambers. Standing before, Draupadi said in a trembling voice, right, because the Pratyekaman is like the head of the household. He's the head servant, you know, so he's like, he would be like, I think there's a name for it, but he's kind of like a butler, but he takes care of the whole house, you know, so all the other servants are there under him. And so then they can move anywhere. You know, because others can't go into the inside chambers like that, but the servants, the other are allowed to go, and Pratyekaman being the head, he can go. Standing before Draupadi, said in a trembling voice, O queen, maddened by dice, your husband has lost you to Duryodhana. Therefore come with me to Dhritarashtra's assembly, where you will be engaged in some menial work. Draupadi stood up swiftly and dismissed the maid who had been tending her hair. Surprised, she said, O Pratyekaman, how can this be true? Who would stake his own wife in a gambling match? Surely the king was intoxicated. Could he find nothing else to stake? Right? Because he must have mistaken. How could he do that? He must have done something else. When he had already lost all his wealth, including his brothers and even himself, he staked you, O blessed princess. So that's the key that she will now go on. Draupadi became angry, but she shrewdly asked the servant, go back to the hall, Pratyekaman, and ask the gambler, who has lost even himself, if he was still my lord when I was staked. Because if he's not, then he can't stake her. And if he was, but that means husband and wife go together. She's lost with him. When I know the answer to this, I shall go with a sorrowful heart. The servant assented to Draupadi's request, you know, because he's smart. You don't become head of the royal household if you don't know all the rules and know all the duties and know all the etiquette. Servant assented Draupadi's request and returned to the hall. Seeing him return alone, Duryodhana yelled, where now is the Panchala princess, foolish man? Right? You know, instead of asking something else, you know, like that. You know, it's just, she's got to come now. What if she was, you know, busy or, you know, she was sleeping or, you know, like that. She has sent me back with a question, O king. The Pratyekaman replied, Draupadi has asked if Yudhishthira was a lord when he staked her in the game. Did he lose himself first or her? Yudhishthira said nothing. He slowly shook his head from side to side, as if demented or deprived of his reason. Duryodhana smiled and said, let Draupadi come here and ask her question directly to Yudhishthira. We shall all hear his reply. You know, he's making it sound like, oh, it's a very noble question. Let her come and ask. You know, it's a great opportunity, a great benediction by Duryodhana that she could come out and ask like that. We don't give this favor to everybody. Like that, he makes it sound like it's so wonderful, even though all they're trying to do is harass more, like that. It doesn't matter how much, they're so envious, envy never goes away, so they can just harass eternally. The Pratyekaman left the hall. Tears fell from his eyes as he approached Draupadi's room for the second time. He stood before the queen, unable to speak. She asked him what Yudhishthira had said in reply. With difficulty, the servant said, "O princess, the assembly is summoning you. It seems the destruction of the Kurus is close at hand." So he can see what's happening. "When the weak-brained Duryodhana wishes to take you before the assembly, he will surely no longer be able to protect his prosperity. He'll be destroyed." Draupadi looked with compassion upon the distressed servant. "The great ordainer of the world has ordained this without doubt," means, you know, Krishna. "Happiness and misery come in turn to both the wise and the unwise. Morality is said, however, to be the highest object in this world. If we preserve morality, it will pour blessings upon us. Let not that morality now abandon the Kurus," right? Because they're not acting according to morality. So if you act, you know, give up morality, you'll lose everything. So why would the Kurus want to do that? So then she's, in other words, instructing. "Go back, good sir, speak these words to the virtuous Kuru elders. I am ready to obey whatever command those moral-minded men may give, for they are conversant with all the precepts of virtue." The servant folded his palms and bowed his head. He turned and left the queen's quarters and went again to the hall. Standing before Dhritarashtra, he repeated Draupadi's words. No one replied. Seeing now Duryodhana's eagerness and Dhritarashtra's complicity, they all sat with downcast faces, right? Because it's just gone beyond, they've said whatever they had to say, and it's gone beyond to a point they couldn't imagine could ever happen within the house of the Kurus. You know, you have Bhishma there, and the great, that Pandu was there, Shantanu was there, Bhishma was there, oh, so many great personalities, and now this is happening in their court in just such a short time. So that's the difficulty that's come up, is that they don't know what to say. It's just so far beyond. And we see is that Vyasadeva had mentioned to his mother, you know, the wife of Shantanu, that after this there'll be the destruction of the Kurus. You don't want to watch this, right? Because she was so worried about, you know, that's why she wanted the, you know, sons and everything, and made so many arrangements, trying to see that the everything would go on nicely. But he said, you don't want to see this. So then she left with him in the forest to do austerities. Yudhishthira then said to the servant, "Go to the bitterly weeping Panchali and tell her that she should appear here, even though she is in seclusion and attired in only a single cloth. This is Duryodhana's command." Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare, Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.